The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Welcome, everybody, to the AC Podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Terry Crosby.
Daniel Markin.
Ah, Daniel is back.
I'm back. I return.
Back in black. Here. He has a t-shirt on. That's
black t-shirt, man. There's only one color.
Well, your choice of shirt sometimes really makes me question humanity. Anyway, before we get started, Terry, happy National Aboriginal Day.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it is the National Aboriginal Day.
Nice.
It just popped up on my calendar. That's, you know, all that automatically generated stuff. And I saw that and I go, wow.
Yeah. Happy Aboriginal Day to everybody out there. Mm-hmm. That's Aboriginal.
Did I hear that Trudeau's changing the name of it to something else?
Really?
I think I read that this morning, that they're going to change the name from Aboriginal Day to something.
Have to hear what it is, but no, I hadn't heard anything like that.
Quickly here, Steve, I found they renamed it National Aboriginal Day to National Indigenous Peoples Day. Terry, what do you think?
You know what? I like that. I like that ring.
You like that ring better
than
Aboriginal?
Yeah, I think I do.
So what does it mean to you, the National Aboriginal Day?
Yeah, I think it's, for myself, it's just pride in who I am, you know, for sure. I mean, my mom is actually visiting out in my reserve right now. Mm-hmm. And
By the way, for those listeners who are like tuning in maybe for the first time today, Terry is half Cree. Your mother is full Cree, right?
Yeah, from Quebec.
And your dad is like as white comes.
Yep. Very, very white. Yeah. Blue eyes and blonde hair when he's younger.
Where is he, in terms of ancestry, where is he from?
He is from England. He's English-Scottish.
Okay.
So born in Nova Scotia.
Yeah. Okay, so going back, you said your mom was visiting in the reserve in Quebec?
Yeah. So I've been in contact with a lot of my relatives down there lately. My mom actually had a fall while she was there a couple of weeks ago.
Ooh.
And she actually broke her arm.
Ouch.
Yeah, and they had to actually put a plate in it with screws. Oh. And so, yeah, we've been in contact more than normal the last few weeks. So she's going to be returning home, I think, the 29th of June. So she's doing much better. But yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything in particular that you do on National Aboriginal Day, or is it just another day of kind of quiet reflection kind of thing? Which do you lean towards more?
Well, I've seen a number of issues pop up that people are trying to put forth, you know, just to get it out there, more exposure on this day kind of thing, which I'm happy to, you know, be along with. Yeah, yeah. It's not so much
What are some of these issues that we should be thinking about?
Well, I mean, just the whole reconciliation process that's going on and has been going on for a number of years. I mean, I think people are bringing more focus to that in the sense that it still needs to be pursued and it still needs to be talked about, because we're nowhere close, I think, to where we should be in this process. Yeah.
Right. Well, then let's move on at this point. Terry, he's been kind of stalking the dark corners of the internet as usual, and has dug up something interesting for us.
This might be interesting to you guys, because we saw that film, remember, when we did our film review of Life?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. A worm went to space and came back with two heads.
What?
What?
So they're, you know, doing some experiments on flatworms. They took them to space, had them up there for, I think, 5 weeks.
Hmm.
So some of the worms, divided and then came back as identical, twins, I guess, or whatever. Others were like, they were more drawn to light when they came back to Earth. So different things happened, but there was one in particular that actually was divided into a fragment and grew two heads.
Hmm. Fascinating.
They have no idea how it happened, which is scary. and spooky. Yeah. Don't you think?
Yikes. Keep it up there a little longer.
Did they bring it back down to Earth?
Did they open the pod?
Did they open the pod?
Yeah. So they don't know how it happened. It could have been the loss of geomagnetic field, loss of gravity, and the stress of takeoff and landing.
Because a worm would know.
Right. Well, I mean, you would feel the gravity, right, as you're taking off or as you're landing. I mean, we feel that when we're flying, right, taking off, landing.
Oh, man.
Could it affect the worms that much?
That much, right? Yeah. Okay, so they bring it back after 5 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. Two-headed worm. They cut off its head. Heads. And it grows back two more.
Oh.
Not four, though. Not four heads.
Not four heads.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Isn't that fascinating? Isn't that interesting?
Interesting. So we're going to move on to something a bit less... shall we say a bit more down to earth?
Oh my goodness.
All the listeners out there, you may have been hearing a lot about this college student that just came back from North Korea, Otto Warmbier. Unfortunately, he passed away. So what happened here is last year in 2016, in January, as Otto Warmbier, this 22-year-old, right, just before he passed away, I think he was 22, this American college student, he went to North Korea on a tour. Yes, you can go to North Korea on tours. And he went there, and on the way back, he was detained at the airport. And the reason being that he tried to steal this propaganda material from his hotel room. So there was this kind of poster, some kind of a propaganda, communist propaganda poster, that he took down from the wall, and he tried to get out of the country with it. And so then the North Korean authorities arrested him at the airport, and he was tried, and then he was found guilty of subversion against the regime. And so then he was sentenced to 15 years of hard labor in North Korea. That's pretty scary, mm-hmm. in and of itself. This was in January of last year, and he was medically evacuated just a few days ago.
He's in a coma, wasn't he?
He was in a coma. He was returned in a coma. So that's why he was medically evacuated. And then, unfortunately...
Well, what they didn't know is that he was in a coma for most of the time that he was there.
Most of the time. I think he went into coma just several months after he was sentenced to hard labor. And then he was finally returned a few days ago, and then I think in just the last couple days, he passed away as of the date of this recording. And so, of course, that has all kinds of implications. You know, politically, there is this sort of sentiment that's growing down in the States, especially, that we should really hold North Korea responsible for murdering one of their citizens, because technically speaking, this is an act of war. Mm. So as if this tension wasn't high enough already. Now this is, and I think North Korea really kind of took a misstep there. But what's even more fascinating to me is the way certain leftist media outlets kind of portrayed this issue right from when Otto Warmbier was first arrested in North Korea. Basically, this teen magazine tweeted saying, hey, this is whiteness at work, right? And he thought his white privilege would protect him everywhere. Well, it didn't. In someone else's land, you need to respect their laws.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, can we just take a few steps back?
Okay.
And just ask you a question. Mm-hmm. I don't know fully the history of that area, South Korea and North Korea.
Right.
So when did that dividing line happen?
Right. So... In 1945, World War II ended with the unconditional surrender of the Japanese Empire. And part of the condition was that they were supposed to pull back into their country, basically, leave all of their colonies. And one of those was Korea, because Korea was forcibly annexed in 1910. And so now they were liberated in 1945, in August 15th of 1945. And guess what? As Japan pulls out, there's this political vacuum. And if you look at the map, North Korea shares borders with both then-Soviet Union and China. And so, of course, the communists from the north, they kind of started moving in.
Yeah.
And so then the U.S., who already had a presence in Japan, right? And they said, okay, we're moving into the south.
Okay.
Don't come below the 38th parallel. And they were very much interested in keeping communism at bay. And so that's where the divide started happening.
Okay.
So China and Soviet communist-backed government arose in North Korea, and then, you know, U.S.-backed government in South Korea. So that's where the divide happened. Interesting.
And that leads into Korean War?
In 1950, yeah. Okay. But that's sort of the long and the short of the history.
So going back to your initial thoughts, I think you said, so this boy is going into a communist country, very oppressive. I'd be careful what I would do in there. Would you not? I mean, thinking of the history and thinking even within the last few years that they've taken prisoners.
Well, even when I was going to school in the States as a Canadian, I had to be there on a visa. Like, I'm there allowed to study as their guest. And I remember, like, they had on the kind of the subway trains in Chicago signs that, like, were billboard signs. And it was common for, like, the students at this Christian school to, like, steal the signs because they would like to put them up in their dorm. And so it'd be like the brown line stop. It'd show all the different stops and like the map of all the trains.
Yeah.
So people would steal that and throw it in their dorms. And I was like, people would always, oh, you're going to steal one? It's what every freshman does. I'm like, no. Because if I steal that and get caught, like I get deported and there goes my studies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. So like I totally went into it with also being told like, hey, you have to have your passport on you all times.
Yeah.
Because if something goes wrong and they need to check who you are, you need to have it there or they can throw you out. And so I always lived in this tension of actually I'm walking on glass. Mm. I just have to do what they say. If I follow the rules and with the best of intentions and don't willingly break the law, I should be okay.
Yeah. I mean, I had the same thought. I've been to Cuba a number of times and I like license plates for some reason. And a number of times when I was down there, I was like, I think it would be cool if I brought a license plate back with me. Not knowing, you know, what would happen or anything like that. But, you know, technically it's not mine. It belongs to Cuba. You know, in the end, I'm just like, that's too much of a risk. You know, even there, right? But this government in Korea, North Korea, is even...
They're known for being very repressive, right? And you may have seen, if you're on Facebook often... You may have seen some testimonies from North Korean defectors and the story of how they escaped from North Korea and all of the turmoil and ordeal that it involved. For example, you know, when you escape North Korea, usually you do that through China, right? So there's this river between North Korea and China, and at places it's pretty shallow and it's pretty narrow, and so you could actually swim across. Right, so that's the kind of place that you go to hop on over to China, but it's not over yet because China is North Korea's strongest ally and they have this agreement, this sort of they work together so that if you get caught in China, you'll be sent back to North Korea and you're going to get executed if you get returned or you're going to be sentenced to hard labor for life or something like that. And so then, you know, like in order to survive in China, like many women, they actually have to, for example, like mothers, they'll have to offer themselves to the authorities sexually in order to protect their kids. And even then, that's not, anyway, all kinds of turmoil. Then they go to like Laos, they go to Thailand, they go to some other place, and then eventually they come to South Korea. It's a pretty repressive regime because...
And it's been that way for some time.
For a long time, yeah.
Yeah, so going into it,
so that
you got to think of that.
So imagine my shock when I see the Affinity magazine, you know, tweeting this thing. It's the tweet has been deleted now, but there is like screen captures and things like that. Basically, the implication was that Otto Warmbier, he did what he did because of his white privilege, and he thought that would protect him. Mm-hmm. And Affinity magazine is not the only one that had that kind of a view. When he was first detained in North Korea back in 2016. Places like Slate.com and Salon.com, like all of these very like left-leaning media outlets, they basically said, well, he earned it.
Sure.
And I look at that and I go, so he tries to steal a poster and he gets 15 years of hard labor?
And but you're also dealing with, again, like Terry said, you're dealing with North Korea. So that's like, you know, the stakes are really, really high. Because, I mean, the question is, yeah, like, I mean, I think both sides on the debate would say, so he broke the law. Yes, he's deserving of a punishment. Now, I think we have to, we would probably all disagree on like, okay, that's ridiculous that it's 15 years. Mm-hmm. However, that's the punishment they see fit.
Right.
And that's the punishment that under that country's law he deserves.
Moral relativism, right?
Yeah.
And that's the scary thing, though, is that if you hold moral relativism to be true, namely the idea that morality basically boils down to, in this case, the law, right? And whatever the country says, whatever the culture says, is what's right for that country. Tell that to the Jews, you know, who got massacred by the millions during the Holocaust. Mm. You know, tell that to the Koreans and the Chinese who got dissected at Unit 731 in Harbin. The interesting thing is, when Affinity Magazine sent out that tweet and I saw that, I thought, you know, I could almost agree with it. The reason is there is a hint of truth there. Yes, when you're in other countries, you should obey their laws. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, it seemed to me that Affinity Magazine was using it for a political purpose. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you look at it more broadly, I don't think you could in good conscience make that kind of a statement, because if you look at North Korea and see what kind of an oppressive and repressive regime it is, you wouldn't be able to say something like that. Now, this is a country that's known for detaining random tourists or some kind of a foreigner in their country to use them as bargaining chips in their negotiations with other countries, like the United States. And what are their charges? It's almost inevitably it's subversion to the regime. And what does that even mean? Right? Anything could fall under that category. So when you kind of put all those pieces together, you see, okay, it's not just about breaking the law. Yes, he broke the law, but there's more at play here.
So when the tweet was, he wasn't a kid or innocent. You can't go to another country and try to steal from them. Respect their laws.
Right.
So when you're saying their laws are skewed in the sense that it's very repressive and it's subjugating the people to fall in line underneath the regime that is governing.
Right. I mean that's a whole another topic in and of itself, right? How North Korea is oppressing its own people. But I think the key point for me is that when Affinity Magazine tweets something like that, I go, okay, they didn't look at the whole picture. They looked at a certain element of this event, and then they took it to feed their political narrative. Because it's not just about a white kid going over there thinking that he's going to be protected like he is protected. He has this privilege in the United States or something like that. In the first place, I'm thinking that's the sort of thing that any North American kid might do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, he was 22. He was 22. But that's still pretty young. I mean, when you're that age, I've done lots of stupid things. I'm not your typical person with the white privilege, right? And I've seen other students, my friends who are black and of other colors, if you will, and they've done the same kind of stupid things. And I look at what Otto Warmbier has done and I go, you know, that's the sort of thing that any college student that age might have done, whether he is white, whether he is black, Asian, Latino, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a diverse campus and they would steal the signs off the train. Now, would they have stolen the signs off the train if the punishment was that hard? If they knew that the United States was a totalitarian regime?
Probably not.
And that you
not.
Might never be seen again?
Probably not.
I'd have second thoughts.
But to your point, like, yeah, it's something anyone could have done. And I don't think it's anything to do with whiteness that made him do it. Mm-hmm. It's bizarre. There was like one of the ladies in the article was saying, now that this white kid has been taken, he knows what it's like for me as a black woman to live in America.
I can appreciate where she's coming from there, right? She lives in this sort of a certain sort of
oppressed place,
but
it's a different kind of oppression.
It's a complete. Oh my
goodness. It's very different. I think it was David French or some other. I think I saw this in another article where it said, okay, so why aren't you fleeing to Canada?
Yeah.
North Koreans literally are fleeing their own country at the risk of having their family executed. Because that's what they do, right? That's how North Korea keeps the people in check and try to prevent them from fleeing the country. So if you flee the country, your family is going to be executed. I had another incident on social media, something similar. I was basically criticizing China for propping up North Korea as a bargaining chip with the U.S. And then somebody replied to that saying, well, the U.S. does the same thing, right? They use Canada as a buffer between China and the United States, just like, you know, China's doing. The purpose there is self-preservation. You know, there's really nothing wrong with that. And I thought to myself, really? Did you just compare North Korea to Canada? I mean, how crazy is that thought?
Well, they're trying to use it to make a point, but the jump that they're making is so out of control that I don't know how anyone can take it seriously. Like, it doesn't help your cause to compare it to North Korea, because I don't know if anything right now in the world compares to North Korea.
Yeah, exactly. I thought, okay, Canada isn't the one that's trying to develop a nuclear weapon in defiance of the international community. Canada is not one that's killing political enemies left, right, and center.
Making families disappear. Keeping people in cells and stuff like that, just like atrocities.
Yeah, and Canada isn't the kind of place where if you speak anything against Justin Trudeau, you're going to be sentenced to, you know, hard labor for life. North Korea is the kind of a country that uses banned chemical weapons to kill a political enemy in another country in a really public place. I'm talking about the assassination of Kim Jong-nam at the airport in Malaysia, right? I'm like, yeah. So you're comparing that, North Korea, to Canada, right? It's not so much that the U.S. is using Canada as a buffer, or that China is using North Korea as a buffer and a bargaining chip for political purposes. The problem is, what kind of a chip is this? Mm-hmm. And it's a totally different story.
What's troubled me, I mean, with all these comments that have come over social media or in the news and stuff like that, has been some parents have just lost their child who they haven't seen for 17, 18 months and did not interact with him when he came back because he was in a coma, mm-hmm. right? And then he dies. A little more respect there.
Yeah, a bit more compassion, right? I mean, how is it? And this, that's what surprises me, is that I would have expected the left of all people to show more respect for the parents who are suffering. But is it because the Warmbiers are white? You know, because they bring up white privilege all the time, mm-hmm. that they feel no sympathy for that family? I don't know. I don't know what it is. But I would have expected a little bit more.
So this white privilege, is it coming from the fact that he was with a fraternity at his college?
That was part of it, too.
That was part of it?
That's
that
a
was
distinct,
part of it.
You know, he's...
So that was attached to him, and then...
Well, he's a frat boy. He's been at a frat. He's white. He has the white lifestyle. Everything's going for him.
What college did he go to?
University of Virginia, I think.
So that's a pretty top level.
Yeah.
Big school, okay. Yeah.
It's big a big school. School, yeah. And that was kind of attached. Like, he had everything going against him in terms of the political narrative of the left. He's white, European, cisgendered,
oh, yeah, that's frat boy. Nice, yeah, the cis white male.
Yeah. When I saw these things brought up with respect to Otto, and I'm like, what's that got to do with anything here? Because I'm thinking about this in context of the political situation in North Korea, what kind of a country it is, and the kind of hostage diplomacy that they employ all the time.
There's bigger things at stake than his gender and his whiteness. Mm. Like, there are global things at stake here, and like this statement. Yeah. Is a global statement of the atrocities happening over there. Yet all they can care about is he was a cis white male.
Yeah.
And he deserved it because of that.
So there's three more Americans over there being held, to my understanding.
And a Canadian, too.
And a Canadian.
I don't know if that's the... In fact, where the Apologetics Canada conference was held in Toronto, or the Thinking conference that was organized by a friend of ours, they hosted it at this church in Mississauga. And it's their pastor who is detained in North Korea right now. We're not as disconnected, it seems, as we might first believe.
So but you wonder, you know, what's going to happen with these other hostages, you know, within this whole political scheme of things, you know, and this whole, what do you call it, hostage
diplomacy.
Diplomacy, yeah.
So taking hostages and using them as bargaining chips. I think in this case, North Korea really shot themselves in the foot. Because, I mean, it's one thing to just detain them and then releasing them when certain demands are met. But it's a totally different story when you send the hostage, when they release the hostage, and the hostage has, first of all, been in this coma for however many months. And upon returning to their home country, they die within days.
And all the signs point to it's not what they said.
Right. They said it was botulism plus sleeping pills, and that's what put him in this coma. But doctors in the U.S. Who examined him, they're saying, no, that's not at all what it is. But it is apparently true that Otto didn't really have any sort of external wounds and things like that. But what they're saying is there was brain damage that is consistent with oxygen deprivation.
Right.
So chances are North Korea did torture him in ways that didn't leave any external wounds. So, you know, it could be water torture. I mean, there's a bunch of ways that you could torture somebody.
It was consistent with him possibly having heart failure, right? And, well, that's what I read. And, I mean, torture can do that for sure.
The thing is, anything that North Korea says, like, you really have to take it with a grain of salt, right? I mean,
North Korea just won the World Cup of soccer 6-0, beating Portugal in the World Cup. Yeah,
really?
That's what they announced
when
the World Cup was going.
Yeah, they will just blatantly lie to their people in order to make the government look good or to. In fact, when South Korean and North Korean officials meet, North Korean officials can't understand why the South Korean government is so beholden to the media. They're saying, why are you so afraid of the media? Well, because we actually have free media and they can actually hold the government accountable. That's why we're afraid of the media. You are not afraid of the media because you control the media.
Yeah.
So I guess only time will tell what's going to happen. Diplomatically, I certainly hope this doesn't lead to World War III, but the way that everything has been going.
There's a lot of tension there.
Yeah. Okay. Probably the key lesson that I took away from this is there isn't necessarily anything particularly wrong with what Affinity Magazine tweeted when you take it on its face. But when you consider the broader context of the political situation, then you see, oh, okay, they totally missed the really important stuff here, right?
Right.
So that's one key lesson, considering the context.
Or caring about the context.
And I think we would do well to show a little more compassion, especially, you know, to the family that's suffering.
Yeah.
Well, was that really loving to the Warmbiers to say all these things about how, you know, their son deserved it?
For them to face this whole media frenzy, you know, and these comments and... You know, they have to make statements after, you know, the death of their son. It's a
messy situation.
Messy.
I mean, there are obvious political implications, and those are important too. But because it is so messy, I think we need to be extra careful, I guess, when we make these statements. All right. Well, I think we need to wrap up there. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada. We've noticed recently that we have received a number of reviews on our podcast on iTunes. So for those of you who did that, thank you so much for doing that. And for those that haven't done that, we ask that you take a few minutes and consider doing this. It apparently really helps with our ratings and things like that, our visibility on iTunes. So we would really appreciate that. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week.